Hello, beautiful soul, and welcome to Unraveling. I'm your host, Lauren Barber, and I am so honored to share this space with you today. Unraveling is a sacred space for you to come to when you feel the need to be nurtured, to be inspired, and witnessed in all the beautiful messiness of life. This is a place for honest conversations, real life emotions, and truth telling. The episodes are intended to be soothing and gentle, yet powerful and impactful, weaving the beautiful art of storytelling together with life lessons, practical tools, and a little bit of magic too. The journey of unraveling has many, many layers, and each of us are on our own unique path. My hope is that the words shared today will offer a spark of curiosity and a moment of resonance, as well as supporting you in your own beautiful explorations. Thank you for sharing this time with me. Let's dive in. Hello and welcome to this episode of Unraveling. I am so honored today to share a conversation that I recently had with the wonderful Sophie Parker. Sophie truly believes that a connection with nature can allow us to explore ourselves more deeply so we can become the truest and most whole expression of who we are. Whether we're at crossroads in our lives, whether we've experienced grief or abundant happiness, Mother Nature always offers us a hand to hold and a space to explore our emotions, our dreams, and our present moment. Sophie has worked in environmental conservation for over 10 years and is driven to play her part in protecting the natural world. For her, this part involves creating time and space to allow others to connect more deeply with Mother Nature. Through silent walking, foraging and sharing, eating around a fire, swimming wildly, walking with the senses and being creative in nature, Sophie opens up ways to explore, unwind and reconnect to yourself. I'm so, so excited to share this conversation with you. And I really hope that it sparks something in you as it has done in me. Good morning, Sophie. It's so lovely to have you on Unraveling. How are you?
Good morning, Lauren. Thank you very much for having me. I'm good. My sort of permanent state of being at the moment is just tired, but then aren't we all?
Yes. And I can imagine that having a small person can also exacerbates that tiredness.
It certainly does. We're going through a tricky stage. So yeah, that doesn't help.
I think all the stages are tricky in their own right.
A continual tricky stage. It just develops and changes over time, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, they just evolve. So I am going to start our conversation by pulling us an oracle card, and I'm using the Starseed Oracle, which I know from chatting to you before is one that speaks to you. It's very watery. Would you look at that? We have Water Your Garden as the card, and the message is nourishment, body care, tenderness, and rest.
Wow. Now that seems very appropriate at the current time. Wow.
So maybe a call to water your garden even more.
Yeah. I think it's so easy at the moment, isn't it, to sort of dwell on things, get wrapped up in what's going on in the wider world and not look after ourselves. And I think that's a big thing, especially for me at the moment with my little one. Like you say, I'm focusing on him, on the bigger things, the worries, the anxieties, the eco-anxiety, and all of a sudden yourself just gets left behind, doesn't it? You think, when was the last time I sat down and did something for me? So yeah, that's a really great one.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that lots of people will resonate with, and something that I've been sharing a lot about, these like micro moments that are what can really top us up and help us feel that nourishment, but maybe not in big long practices. I think it's really important to remember that there's still so much power in those little mini moments. So often it's something like we feel like there's no point if we can't do a big, long yoga nidra practice, for example. But actually, sitting with your eyes closed for a minute can be really nourishing.
I completely agree. I think you told me that a few months ago when I was really like at my wit's end with motherhood, and everything was, you know, he wasn't sleeping, he wasn't feeding. And you said to me, just take a moment. And I thought, well, why just a moment? That's not going to work. But it does, doesn't it? It's just taking those couple of minutes, just to come back to your breath, or just to stand outside, even if it's raining, just to feel something on your skin and feel like connected with something again, where, you know, you can so easily just sit still and be stuck inside and just see the same four walls day after day, especially at the moment, that just taking that time just to reconnect in whatever way works.
I think it's so tempting to go to maybe the slightly unhealthier habits when we think we don't we sort of tell ourselves that we don't have time to do like a quick meditation, but yet we'll find ways to scroll through social media, which I know we've kind of had conversations about this before, but definitely really in this like in between space, this weird place with social media, particularly Instagram, as it's something I love, but also and realizing that I use as a I use it for connection because that is quite isolating, especially motherhood, but also that I go to it when I could be doing something more nourishing to myself.
It just feels easy. I think that's the problem, isn't it? You think, okay, I can pick up my phone and just scroll and I can just sit here and I'll feel my mind, your mind, it's mindlessness, isn't it? You're not mindfulness, mindlessness. You're taken away from the current situation, which you might be, I mean, me for sure, I'm feeling more anxious about things, like I said. And I think you pick up your phone, you can scroll and your mind gets taken away momentarily, or you connect with someone and you feel that connection that you haven't felt all day because it's just been you and your little one. And that becomes so addictive, doesn't it? Because it's so easy to just pick your phone up and quickly scroll. But as you said, it's just not, I'm not in a great place with it either at the moment, because it's too easy to pick up a phone. And I know what I should be doing is, you know, reconnecting more with myself in some way, not my phone.
it is really challenging though, because I do feel it's particularly now, and also just motherhood in general, particularly these early years, it is isolating. And even without what's going on in the world at the moment, I think it would be isolating anyway, because so often you are, I mean, in the most loving way, you are on your own. Obviously, many times you are also with your little soul, but sometimes you just crave that like connection with another woman or another human, like not that they're not human beings, but you know, like another adult, or just a conversation that has some like real depth to it. And then for me, that brings up guilt and a bit of shame around like, why am I not taking making the most of every single second with Sophia? But I think there's an element of being kind to ourselves, isn't there? So it's like finding this balance of using social media, using Instagram as a place for nourishing connections, but being more conscious around the time we spend on it. So yeah, I don't know what that looks like yet. Maybe that will come clear, but it's certainly something that's going around my mind a lot at the moment.
Yeah, I'm with you and I completely agree. It's a slippery slope, isn't it? I think that's the problem. It's quite an addictive thing, quite an addictive behavior in many ways, especially when you do feel like it's a way to connect with other people when, like you said, we can feel so isolated. But for me, it's the same thing. I just crave that adult conversation. It feels like a release, doesn't it? To say to someone else, even if it's on Instagram, oh, having a bit of a bad day today because I'm just exhausted and I haven't had a break and Dylan won't nap. And you just say that to someone else and suddenly you feel a release for some reason. And even if it is on a message, a DM message on Instagram, I mean, it would be far better to say it to somebody's face, but when we're all stuck in our houses, it becomes more difficult.
Well, we went down a little rabbit hole there.
Oh, we sure did.
I love it. So let's begin by just sharing a bit more about you. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming the Sophie that you are today?
I can. I think I'm very much still discovering the Sophie that I am today. I think, I'm 33. I think I am 33. It's easy to forget. And I think throughout my whole life, there's been this sort of continual development and continual, just journeying to who I am. And for me, a part of me that's always been here is my love for nature. And I can remember when I was little, I would go out with my granddad and we would go bird watching. And I remember we'd sit in his car near the sea, and he'd have these really old, lovely binoculars, and we'd sit there and we'd watch the birds and the waders out on the mudflats. And then with my nan was a massive sea swimmer, so she'd swim pretty much every day of the year in the sea. And I remember swimming with her, and there'll be days in the summer where the sea would be full of jellyfish, and I'd be like, oh no, Nan, we're gonna get stung. And she was just this massively vibrant, strong woman. I mean, she was such an inspiration. But to have that connection with nature, with her and my granddad, and their love for their garden and their love for growing things, I think that massively shaped the person that I am. So when I was little, I always wanted to be a vet, but I thought, oh, I can't do that because the hard decisions and the sad times would be too much for my heart. So I decided that I wanted to work outdoors, and I met this lady when I was at university, when I was writing my dissertation, who was a ranger on the coast down in Dorset. And I remember talking to her and thinking, wow, you've got the best job. I wish I could do that. I never thought I would. And then I did. I managed to do that. And I did that for 10 years. And for me, that really helped me develop this really deep, deep connection with nature. So I was out on the land every day, whether that was in the snow, in the sun, in the rain. And I got to know these places that I looked after like the back of my hand. And I really felt like on days when I felt sad, I was being held by her. I was being held by Mother Nature. I was being held by the space that I was looking after. And on days where I felt happy and vibrant, the sun was shining and she was happy too. And I really, throughout my life, when I've had hard times, so my mum passed away in 2015, and that was a massively hard time for me. And grief is still and will always be with me. It's, of course, my love for her I still carry with me, so I'll always carry that grief. But for me, at the time when, and even now, especially being a mother myself, when I haven't had a mother figure and I've needed mothering, I've really felt that Mother Nature has been there for me in that way. I feel like I'm going a little bit round in circles here, but through the hard times in my life, nature has defined me, supported me, been there for me, and is such a massive part of who I am now. So my passion at the moment is to introduce and help other people connect with nature it might be a really superficial level, like for the first time, if you aren't used to being outdoors and are a bit fearful, especially for women. I think being alone in nature can be quite a fearful place to be. But also for other people that want to deepen that connection. So whether that's through learning what different plants are or how to forage in a responsible, sustainable way, how to spend time in nature mindfully and just really connect with the space that you're in. So that's what I feel my North Star, my arrow is at the moment. It's pointing me towards deeper connection for other people. And a lot of that comes back to one of my first experiences I had when I was a ranger in Devon. I took a group of people out to the coast who lived in Plymouth. So this was 10 minutes from the beach. And it was the first time they'd ever been to the beach, even though they only lived 10 minutes away. And the kids, when I showed them what was inside a rock pool, the kids were just like amazed. It was, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is real. And for me, that that sheer joy that they felt is what I think Mother Nature can bring to us. So whether it's joy, whether it's love, whether it's just feeling held, and that's what I want more people to discover, because I think without that connection, we can't protect her, and we need to, because of everything we've done in the past, she's in a bad way. So we need to connect with her and protect her. And I hope that's answered your question. I've gone off down my passion for nature rabbit hole.
Oh, that has answered my question and more. I literally had full body tingles listening to you share that. It's funny because we spend quite a lot of time together, you know, we have done in person, luckily. But actually so much of that I never knew. I'm kind of a bit in awe, to be honest, of the beautiful words that you've just spoken, because it just that I mean, I feel like we could just wrap up now.
What more is there to say?
I don't even know where to go from that. The depth of your connection with the Mother Earth has played such an important role in every area of your life. I guess a question would be, like you were saying, like for people that haven't necessarily got that connection or who are intrigued or maybe have it a little bit, but how do you go about deepening and building that confidence up around being, as you said, you know, for some women, it's quite terrifying to be out in nature on their own. And I feel very grateful that I don't feel that, but I can understand why. Stories we've been told, you know, there's a lot of programming around that. But where do you start? If you have no idea, where do you start? How do you begin that relationship with Mother Earth when it's not there, or maybe it's just a seed?
It can be, so I guess if it's from a fearful space, if you're fearful of being out on your own, and even if it isn't actually, it can just be a really simple small step, like spending more time in your garden, which if you're fearful of spending time in the woods, for example, on your own, that's a first mini step to take where you're in a safe space, but you can explore what's around you outside. So whether that's sitting outside and just taking time just to listen to what you can hear, the noises of nature, whether that be the birds, water, feeling the rain on your face, and just feeling it. Because when we're out with her, she really does connect with all of our senses, even taste. I feel like we can taste her at times. You know, that really deep earthy smell that you get in the woods, you can taste that. I really feel that you can taste that. As a first step, I would say just make it easy, make it simple, take time just to get in your garden, go to the park, and then build your confidence. And when you do feel ready to be in a more wild environment, maybe, I guess, like the woods or the heathland or something like that, go back to like the simplest of things, and maybe take a moment before you arrive just to say, okay, today I'm going to focus on one thing. And for me, so I love to focus on how I feel. So whether it's, especially at the moment when we're out in the cold weather, how the cold air makes me feel, how it makes my skin feel, how I can feel it on my chest, how I can feel it in my nose, how, you know, my skin might get goosebumps if I'm really cold, and how that makes me feel in my body if I feel more tense. And I think really coming back to like the senses, the five senses, when we're in nature and focusing on one of those at a time, brings us back to us, and it brings us back to everything that's happening around us in nature. And I think that's a great starting place. And I say to everyone, if you want to forage, or you want to, explore nature in a different way, the first way is just, the first thing to do is just build that first connection and really build up like a relationship with the land that you want to forage from, for example, so that you feel more connected, and then when you feel more connected, you know whether or not it will be right if you pick that flower, or if you take that leaf off that tree, or if you pick up that wood from the floor, because you have that long-term understanding and relationship with the space around you. And you'll just know, I think, if something you've not seen that before, okay, well, that's not something we're going to take today. So yeah, first steps, just start small, build on it, and focus on the small things. So whether that's the senses, or, you know, the birds, or the clouds, or the rain, or something, just start small and build a relationship from there.
I love that idea of just like tuning into the sensations and really embodying the experience that you're in that moment. I think that's a really powerful tool to presence as well. So I know you mentioned earlier that, you know, there's a little bit of anxiety, and I think both me and you have talked about this in the past, like we both have had periods of worry and anxiety and are maybe more prone to that. How has nature and your connection supported you in those moments? Because for me, it's been my savior at times, whatever the weather is doing. And I love what you were saying, like she reflects your inner world as well, which is why I think it can be really tough when it's gray, when it's raining, when Mother Nature is actually in the dark, in the grayer shades, for us to feel that as well. It's quite confronting, because we don't necessarily want to feel those slightly lower emotions. But yeah, I'd love to know how you have found her to soothe and to hold you when you are in those anxious times. Are there any practices you've gone to, or anything you do specifically when you feel like that?
I completely agree. Like, nature has been my savior. The Mother Nature has been my savior at times of anxiety. For me, it's just the really simple things. I think the key for me about time in nature is that it makes me slow down and it makes me notice. And I can so easily not do those things when I'm in the house, when I'm running around looking after my little boy, or getting dinner ready, or making sure that he's sleeping. So when I'm in nature, I think the most important thing is that there's this, where we were talking about mindlessness earlier, time with nature for me is really mindful time. And we know we use that word so much, but my mind is full, and it's not full in a way that it's worrying and thinking about things. It's full in what I'm experiencing. And I think that brings me so fully back to my body, that those things that I'm worried about, that are probably really insignificant worries that I have absolutely no control over, suddenly they are washed away because I'm completely immersed in the world around me. I'm looking at, so people that walk with me sometimes, especially when I'm in my full nature geek mode, they're like, how do you even notice these things? Like, why have you noticed that moss that's on the tree over there? And I think, well, once you've tuned your body into really noticing, that it just flows, it just comes. And I think for me, it's that real full body experience where I'm listening, I'm smelling, I'm tasting. So that might be picking a blackberry on the walk, you know, eating things as I go. That I'm so focused on the here and now. And I can honestly say I don't experience that at any other time, even in some of my most meditative states inside. Thoughts always come up, and they come up much more regularly for me than they will when I'm outside, because I'm so immersed in what's happening around me, and I can spend an hour walking and I won't have a single thought about a worry that I've had, because I'm so focused on, like I said, my senses. I'm focused on the sounds I can hear. And it's not important to know, for me, it's not important if I don't know what that bird is, or I don't know what that tree is, or I don't know what that plant is. It's the experience of noticing difference. So noticing that sound was different from the other sound, or noticing that that leaf is a slightly different shape to that one, or the bark of that tree is a completely different texture and shade to that one. And these things, and noticing variety in nature, is what, for some reason, it's really what grounds me, and it's what grounds me into myself. And I really feel that if I don't have that rooted connection with nature, I don't know who I am. I think I start to get lost in all the things that we happen to get lost in today's society. So financial worries, health worries, worries about your child, I become that anxious person. And I'm not like that when I'm outside. And I think it's such a transformative space. And I think through lockdown, so many more people have discovered how transformative nature can be and how much Mother Nature does hold us and can offer us. And I really think that's great. And I hope in the long term, it sticks with us all, because she needs us to be connected to her.
Yeah, and when we're connected to her, we want to take care of her more, right?
Exactly. And I think without that connection, we don't know how important she is. And, you know, if somebody said to you, if we were talking about elephants, for example, and you'd never seen one on the TV, you'd be like, oh, why should I care about that? I don't even know what they look like. And it's the same thing with nature in our back gardens and nature around us now. If we can't experience it, we haven't got that passion and we haven't got that desire to want to protect her. And yeah, like I said earlier, we need to, because she needs us to be there for her at the moment and into the future, especially with climate change and the state that we are in at the moment with the sixth mass extinction of species. It's just, not to cause eco-anxiety, but we need to know about these things, because in some way we have to change our behaviour to be there for her. And that starts with the connection.
That is such a really powerful, like, penny drop moment, I guess, for me. I think I take it for granted that I am quite connected to her, and I am by no means am I living my life as consciously as I would like to be. But you're right in saying, I love what you said about if we kind of ignore her and we don't have any connection with her, then we're never going to have the, like, our investment into her is not going to be there, because why should we care if it doesn't impact our day-to-day life? But, you know, walking around here and seeing rubbish and seeing, you know, like, kind of undergrowth completely trampled and ruined, and like that hurts. And I think if you weren't out in it, you wouldn't see that and start to notice it, and then you can't start to shift your behaviors. So it's like, I guess it's one of those things that some people don't want to face because it's a big thing to have to face, but it's a responsibility we all have, right? What would be, and I ask this for myself and for other people, but what are the sort of simple steps that people can take to become more conscious and to become more supportive to her? I know that there's so many different ways, and I sometimes feel very overwhelmed by all the things I should be doing, and that sometimes feel really difficult and really challenging. If you were just to take some first initial steps towards looking at the way you live, looking at the way you behave and the way you relate to her, what would you suggest? What are your kind of words of wisdom around that?
That's a big one. I think it really is. I think I completely agree with you that we become so overwhelmed with all the things that we could do that it almost prevents us from doing anything at all. And that, I guess, that is a problem, but it's not one that isn't surmountable. I think the biggest thing we can do is just think about what we consume. And I don't mean just what we eat. I mean what we think about, what we do about what we put on our skin, what food we eat, what clothes we wear, what we have in our home, what our furniture is made of. And it's not, for me, I would say that's more important, is just this conscious thought every time you purchase something or every time you're thinking about purchasing something. Train your brain to have this conscious thought. Do I need this? Could I repair what I've already got? Could I get it secondhand? Where am I buying my food from? Do I need to go to the supermarket every time? Can I support the local greengrocer? Can I buy a organic veg box that's plastic free? I think the most important thing is that we get into this mindset where we're questioning, because ultimately it's consumption and our connection with consumption and the economy which is causing environmental degradation. So what we need to do is somehow separate consumption from environmental harm. And that's a massive problem, because obviously we live in this society that's driven by consumption, by it's driven by spending, it's driven by capitalism. And it's hard to escape that because we're continually being told, buy this, you need this, buy that. So even when it comes to things like not using throwaway coffee cups, I mean, I know that's been a massive thing in the past, but then there's this thing, oh, do I need to buy another reusable coffee cup when I've got two at home already? No, even though it is a green thing to do to buy a reusable coffee cup, we don't need four at home, you know, we can just have one at home. So for me, I think what I would say in terms of first steps is just become more aware. Try and really think about what you buy and when you buy it and where you buy it from, and maybe inform yourself more, because there's so much greenwashing going around at the moment. So we're continually being told that clothes are sustainably made because they've got 0.1% of recycled plastic in them or something. And you think, well, actually, they may have a tiny amount of that in them, but we're still consuming, we're still using all the other materials in there are being used and consumed for the first time. So that isn't the case. Think about greenwashing, like I said, and think about how you can trust who you're buying from and research who you're buying from and think, okay, what they've said there, that rings true with me and I'm happy to buy from them. I think that's what I do all the time. I question who I'm buying, where I'm buying from, and if it sits well with me. And sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes I have to buy something because it's I haven't got the money and it's cheap. And I think, okay, well, just this once I'm going to do that, but next time I'll buy it secondhand, or next time I won't buy a tool because I'll just fix up the thing that I already have. I think it's about making compromise, but being aware when we do buy things new of their story. So being aware that, like I said, that being aware there could be greenwashing going on, being aware of the impact different things have on the environment. So for me, a really big one is clothing, which has now over the past, I'd say maybe year or two, has become more of a talking point, how much of an impact fashion is having on the world. That's through things like water consumption, chemical dyes, and thinking, okay, well, how can I as an individual buy fewer clothes? So I now what I do, I wait and wait and wait and I wait, and then there's something that I really, really want, but it's more expensive because it's organic cotton or something, but I'll buy it because I've not bought anything for 6 months, a year, whatever it is, and I really want it, so I'll buy it. And with my little boy, it's been really hard because obviously they grow through things much quicker, but we've tried to really use a lot of hand-me-downs, and we try not to buy too much, but obviously you have to. So it's about making compromise, isn't it? So get secondhand stuff, but when you need it, buy some cheap stuff at the supermarket if you have to, but just be aware that that's what you're doing. I think that's the most important thing.
So it's almost, it's just more mindful consumption, like, yeah. So you're not just, I think you just, you almost forget, you know, you're down in the supermarket aisles and you're just like, you just add things because they're there, and it's sort of, and that's what they're designed to do, you know, they're very cleverly marketed and get you when you are in that kind of mindless state, I suppose. But actually, if you can just take a moment, that that feels like a doable step. And also I like the fact that, you know, it's not bringing yourself like shame and negativity to yourself if you do have to buy something that isn't necessarily as eco-friendly as you'd like it to be. Can you just explain a little bit more about greenwashing, because I hear the word and I just would love to know, like, just what actually is greenwashing?
So now more and more of us want to consume sustainable products. We want things that are green, vegan, eco-friendly, whatever. And part of the problem with that is that manufacturers and brands have caught onto this and they want us to buy their stuff. So they tell us it's green because they've used 1% organic oil in their face cream or something. So they tell us it's green and we believe them because it's marketing and that's just what happens. And so we consume, we buy it. And part of the problem is that, as we know, marketing is so good that we just we just consume, we still consume and we still go around in that circle. So I think, and it sounds really sad because it's like, don't trust, don't trust what they're trying to sell you. But it is all about having your own awareness and knowing yourself what is green and what isn't green. So you can see when someone is trying to greenwash you. Did that answer the question?
Yeah, no, it did. It did. It's, I mean, it's marketing.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I guess comes down to being discerning with your consumption again. So I think that's definitely been a takeaway from what you've been saying, is it's just, it's like taking a moment to think before you actually just like click, buy, click. I mean, it's so easy just to, especially with online shopping or in your supermarket, whatever. And actually, like in times where it's been, you know, when you are a bit isolated or you are feeling a little bit lonely, it can be really easy to fill yourself up with buying nice things online and having little, like those little kind of pleasures that come with buying yourself something new. But actually, like, is it necessary? So it's like that fine line, isn't it? But I guess, again, it's like, if you can just take a moment to reflect on why and maybe question and just do your own research around marketing or brands or what, not going just on face value all the time.
Yeah.
Is, yeah.
I completely agree with you, what you said about that habit of buying for that moment of, oh, I've bought something, or oh my god, it's going to come through the post and I'm going to open it, that's so exciting. But what I try to remind myself is that that is such a momentary pleasure, that is just like 30 seconds once I've opened it and then it's gone. So I guess one of the other things I try and think about is, how can I create pleasure that's longer lasting? And sometimes for me that is like not buying things just because I've seen them once and I think, oh yeah, I really want that, let's buy it. But it's thinking about it and giving myself a week to think about, if I really do want it, then yes, I'll buy it. If I really do need it, yes, I'll buy it. But if it's like a, in the moment, you know, someone's having a sale, do I just buy because I just want that moment of pleasure? But then that's, is, oh, it's hard, isn't it? Because like you say, we're all in such a difficult place at the moment with the way the world is, that we do all need a bit of pleasure, and sometimes we do just want to buy something. So it's about balance, isn't it?
Yeah. And but then I think maybe coming back to, okay, like what would serve me best in this moment, and actually maybe that connection I'm seeking, like that kind of moment of pleasure, is like, how can I find that within my body, or how can I find that going out into nature and actually kind of filling myself up in different ways. So I suppose it comes back to that card. It's like, how are you watering your garden? Like, are you nurturing yourself with like free flowing, beautiful, nourishing water? Or are you actually, is it a bit muddy? Is it a bit, is it not necessarily, is it a bit stagnant? Like, how are you actually doing that? And I suppose that's just coming back to being more conscious and thinking before you take that first, you know, to that instant step. And it also comes back to what we were saying about social media. You know, you get that instant hit. We are so used to having instant access to everything that it's almost a bit of a shock when we, you know, might have to wait a week to have a delivery, or we might have to, you know, we might have to be like bring in our patience a little bit. So yeah, I think that's probably part of the problem, is that we are very, we want things right now, and we've got used to having things right now.
I completely agree. And actually that isn't our fault, because it's the world that we live in. We are this, it's, society is fast paced, and everyone, most people want things right here, right now. They want, you know, we want to get on our phones and buy something and for Amazon to deliver it the next day. We are quite naturally impatient. And I know myself in so many areas of my life. So even in like work, for example, where I might want to achieve something or get somewhere, there's an impatience around it, isn't it? But actually when we just slow down and we think about how Mother Nature would look at that, like she would look at that in a much more long-term process, a long-term thought pattern. And just to do that, just to take a breath and think, okay, I don't need to rush this. I don't need to rush through my life because I'm here this once. Let's just make decisions that feel right and do ultimately what is best for me, but over not just this 30 seconds, but over my entire lifespan, what would I feel happiest with? But yeah, like I said, it's just the society that we live in is very much fast paced and driven towards do, 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 rather than, as the card that you pulled earlier is suggesting we should do more of, rather than rest, replenish, and just go slowly. And that's, I guess that's another thing that Mother Nature teaches us, whether it's through the cycle of the moon or the cycle of the seasons, that there is this constant cycle. And if it's not happening in this cycle, maybe it's the next cycle. There's no need for it to be here now, because when it is with us, that will be the right time.
Yeah. And I was, when you were talking, I was thinking very much along the same lines, in that like Mother Nature has shown me how things are not always in full expression, and how there's beauty in that the death phase, you know, the winter of there's not anything, like there's not the big vibrant colors, and it's very it's darker, it's muddier, it's muckier, and I think there's so many people, you know, like find winter really challenging because it forces us inward, it forces us to retreat a bit more because nothing is in full bloom. And actually, if we align ourselves energetically with those seasons, like, and tune in and actually let her be the mirror, let her show us how to live in a cyclical way, then I've certainly found in the last few years, by allowing myself to have a winter, and my energy levels through the rest of the year have been profoundly impacted. Like I have felt so much more alive in spring and summer because I've allowed myself the winter to be a bit more underground, to not be out on the surface all the time. So that kind of seasonal way of living and living in those cycles is really powerful, I've found.
Yeah, I completely agree. I personally have found that very hard though at times, you know, that real need to rest and slow down. And I think for me it all comes back to this grief that I'm carrying from the loss of my mum. Like if I slow down I feel more, and I don't want to slow down to feel more, but then I'm just burying my head in the sand. So I need to feel all of these emotions to be my fullest self, and I want to honour that grief because it's honouring my mum as well. So however much in the past I've pushed past it and I've pushed to do more and I've been continually in that do, 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 full on mode, now I am trying to, and I have been maybe for about a year, trying to slow down, trying to take notice, trying to rest more, which is really hard with a little boy. But it does bring things in that maybe we are uncomfortable to feel, but then all of these emotions are what, valid. They aren't bad things to feel. There's no good or bad, is there? And we need to feel and carry all of them, because otherwise, for me especially, they just come out in other ways that doesn't it. I just know when I haven't processed things properly or sat with things, because there'll be an imbalance somehow.
I think it's really beautiful that you have shared that, thank you, because I think it absolutely really does hit the nail on the head around why there is so much fear around slowing down and feeling the winter. And I agree, it's taken me a long time to allow myself that space, because it brings up stuff, you know, when we pause and there's stillness, it creates space, and space is often brings up the challenging things that we've managed to push away and that we've kind of hidden from, which might be minor things, but they might be really, really difficult things to face. And unfortunately, you know, the more we shove them away, the more, the stronger they get, which we know, but again, it doesn't make it any easier to deal with them. So I guess if people are finding that hard, how do you hold space for that grief, and how do you hold space for that those challenging emotions, knowing that there is a cycle to them, but that it's really uncomfortable to be in them?
Yeah, it's really hard. I still find it really, really hard, if I'm honest. I think for me, it's acknowledging. The most important thing is for me to acknowledge those feelings, because if I don't, I essentially blow up. And it's scary. And I've spent time like feeling scared about these feelings and not wanting to show them, and then going to bed at night and feeling it at night, and then not sleeping because I feel like that's a private space, you know. My partner's asleep, I can lie there crying, he won't know. And they are uncomfortable, and they're so, so hard. And I think, as I said earlier, for me, before I even spoke to anyone about my grief, the way that I dealt with it, and I still do, probably on a daily basis, is by telling Mother Nature. So when I'm with her, if I'm having a particularly bad day, I feel like as I walk, as I feel the sort of thud of my feet on the floor, that rhythmic, you know, movement, step after step after step, my mind might come back to how I'm feeling and the sadness and the grief that I'm carrying. But for some reason in that space, if I want to cry, I'll just cry. If I want to shout and scream, I can just do that without judgment from anyone else, because Mother Nature is there regardless of whether I'm happy or sad. And then I might go and hug a tree, because sometimes we just need to hug something, and we can't hug anyone at the moment, can we? So I might as well hug a tree. I don't think I could give anyone very good advice around coping with grief and sadness and how to spend time thinking about it and feeling it. All I can say is that allow yourself, when you feel ready, allow yourself to feel it, and don't feel ashamed for feeling it either, because it's so much a part of all of us. It's just some of us choose to bury it more than others. And it is something that we've always experienced through the history of human life. We've carried this grief with us. And I think probably in the past, we were more open as communities to sharing with each other and talking about it. And now that I do feel able to talk about it, I think it really helps that I do share. When I do talk about it and I do share how I feel and how it makes me feel. I guess once I've been with Mother Nature and she's been like my hug, my first step, then I feel a little bit more confident about communicating with others about how I feel. But for me, it's been a long journey. It's been 5 years really before I felt comfortable to really feel it and think about it. So, and even now I don't, it hurts. Really, that physical pain, it hurts. But I know I need to, because especially as a mother now, I need to deal with these things, because they do come up in different ways otherwise.
What came through there is just that Mother Nature is the ultimate space holder. Like, she holds space for, she has no judgment, she has no criticism, she holds space for everything, and she is the ultimate holder of it all. And how incredible to have that. And that hits me really hard, and reminds me how, you know, we need to hold space for her. Like, we need to step up now. She's held so much for so many of us for so long, and now she's asking, she's literally begging for us to hold her. And we do need to. So,
And it really, I think for me, because I'm so passionate about the natural world, it really, I feel so saddened and then so angry when I see these things happening. But, and it might be something as stupid as we were talking earlier about litter on a footpath in the middle of the woods. And I think, why? Why leave that there? Why just put it in your pocket, put it in your bag, take it home.
I feel full on rage. I feel hard. Like I just don't understand how someone can consciously look at a bin that's been generously put there and see that it's full and still put their rubbish next to it because they are too lazy and can't be asked to take it home with them. I'm sorry, but that makes me rage.
No, I completely agree. I'm with you there for sure.
I don't know how anyone can consciously do that. Like, you have to very, very specifically see that the bin is full, put your rubbish on the floor, and it's usually something small you could easily take home with you. I mean, that just gets me raging.
I know, I'm with you. I feel it too. I really do. And the number of times, I think because of my background as a ranger, like the number of times recently where I've confronted people when I'm walking and I've seen them drop litter and I've said, oh, excuse me, you've dropped some rubbish, do you mind picking it up? And they sort of look at me like, how dare you? Or someone's dog's running around sheep in a field and I just know, you just don't know what can happen to you. I mean, a dog may attack, it may not. And I just say to them, oh, could you get your dog on the lead? Because this sheep might be distressed. And people don't like being asked. I mean, who am I to tell them? And that's fair enough. But I am so passionate that I don't mind using my voice to stand up for her in those moments. And quite often, especially if I'm walking with my partner, he'll be like, oh, God.
Here she goes.
Here she goes again. So just hold your breath. Come on. But I can't. And I think she doesn't have a voice, and Mother Nature doesn't have a voice. And because if she would use it in the same way that I'm trying to use mine. Because she is, like you say, she's screaming at us about all the things that we've done to her because we've overconsumed and we've been greedy. She's screaming at us that we need to change. It's just change isn't coming. It's not really, is it? I mean, as individuals, we're trying, but governments, we need to make long-lasting change. We need to make change that isn't just for this political moment in time. It needs to last. We need to make a big shift, really, in our society to do the things that we need to do for Mother Nature. Mm. When I read things about, 15% of the species in the UK are at risk of extinction, and some of those are like hedgehogs that we love, that are such a common, you know, for us, we think, oh, they're such an endearing and iconic species. And yet they're on the brink because of us, because of farming, because of habitat loss, because of urbanisation. And what are we doing about it? We're still building. We're still putting HS2 out there. And I just think, oh, when are we going to stop and really think and consider the bigger, longer term impact of us, really?
Well, unfortunately, it's going to be, well, as we're seeing now, like there's been so many more documentaries and things that are highlighting this, but I for one have felt like quite hopeless at times, like really quite scared for Sophia to be, you know, the potentially, you know, what's going to be here in 50 years. And what I'd love to do is finish this podcast episode on hope, on empowerment, and actually, you know, focusing on what we can do, focusing on how we can take steps, and that how every single little thing matters. Because I think otherwise, I think what happens is we just think, well, this is hopeless anyway, I might as well not bother. So do you have any more parting words of wisdom around that, and how to stay hopeful? And because I think we need that hope to stay motivated to actually make changes. I need that. I know that's how I stay motivated. So what would you say to that?
I completely agree. I think without hope, we all just begin to think, what is the point? It's an interesting one. I think hold on to hope. Look at people like Greta Thunberg. Look at the next generation that are coming up that are really, really passionate about change. And hold on to that, and then do, as we said before, just really be conscious about how we're living our lives and connect in whatever way you can to nature, whether that's watching a documentary I mean, who doesn't love David Attenborough? Or going outside in the rain, or playing in the mud, like really bring your inner child out when you're outside and just have fun and think, okay, I deeply, deeply care about this space. I deeply care about Mother Nature, the enjoyment, the imagination that comes up when I'm outside. This is what I want to protect. And just feel that love, just feel love and hope. And I think we'll do it. But like you said, without hope and without love, we'll just fall into an endless pit of doom and gloom. So hold on to the positives, hold on to how she makes you feel, hold on to those news stories about positive change, like otters in nearly all of our rivers now in the UK, which is amazing because that wasn't the case a few years ago. How hedgehogs are, there's a slight increase now where in sort of, I think it's more semi-urban areas, they're doing quite well. So things are changing, the curve can change, and we are the only people that can do it. So yeah, hold on to hope and be conscious in your decisions.
It made me think of my favorite quote: when nothing is certain, anything is possible.
Yes, definitely.
What an honor. I'm so grateful for all of your shares. Where can people connect with you to find out more about all the amazing things that you're doing and the Nature Connection and whatever is to come? Where can people connect with you?
Surprise, surprise, Instagram, as we were talking earlier. So I'm a bit confusing at the moment. I've got two spaces on Instagram. So I've got Root and Bloom in Nature, and there's a dot in between each of those words, which is where I share things about Nature Connection, foraging, slower living. And then I still have it's like my herbal shop. It's where I want to be creative, and I've scaled it right back, and that's Betany and Sage, so that's on there as well. I'm hoping to have a website soon for my Nature Connection stuff, but as we were saying, trying to honour my inner winter, trying to honour winter itself, and just taking things a bit more slowly at the moment. So hopefully that will come one day.
It will. Amazing. I'll put all your links and details in the show notes anyway, so people can get in touch with you. Thank you so much. It's been such an honor to hear you speak so passionately, and it's inspired me. So I'm hoping that the listeners will also feel inspired. And yeah, I am very grateful for your time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely to talk about these things that, yeah, fire me, put the fire in my belly. It's what I love talking about. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Unraveling. If this has sparked your interest and you want to dive in deeper, head over to laurenbarber.co to access more resources, including blogs, meditations, and previous shows. You can also discover more about sharing sacred space with me in my group, memberships, and one-to-one offerings. I would be so grateful if you can share this episode with anyone who might need to hear the words too. And if you have a moment, it would mean the world to me if you can subscribe and leave a review on your podcasting platform. If you feel called to connect with me on a more regular basis, then please do join me over on my Instagram account at laurenbarber.co. Until next time, I wish you love and gentleness on this beautiful but sometimes chaotic journey of unraveling.